FBI maintains, and more and more. Anyway, that and Public Revolution, we'll talk about stuff. On the other side.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. And today my guest is former Jackman, Maine town manager, Tom Kaczynski. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Patrick. Always a pleasure.
Well, it's always great having you on. And I have a lot of things I want to ask you about today. I think this will be a fun show. You know, you're somebody who has a lot of experience in politics and electoral politics. Now, the town manager position is not an elected position, but it's administration. That's real life administration. And in a lot of municipalities, you know, the person who would be the chief administrative officer would be an elected position. It would be a mayor. But you've been involved in electoral politics before on campaigns. And there's a lot of talk now about, you know, what should be our direction? What should be our emphasis? Should we be, you know, in mass rallies out on the streets? Should we be concentrating on electoral politics? Should we be trying to build up our own independent media presence? And I wanted to start off the show by asking you for your take on where the emphasis should be.
Well, I guess the short answer is I would give is yes. I think we actually need all of those things, to be honest, because they all work and support one another. But in terms of where you start with that, and what I work on personally, is the idea that you find a set of principles you can agree upon that creates a coalition for success. Like, look at the left as an example, right? It's a coalition of a lot of disparate groups whose mm-hmm. only real common interest is their opposition to sort of traditional identity in terms of white people, white culture, liberty, and those things. And I think we could learn from them by starting to build a network where, you know, the people who broadly are on the right, you know, work together to find the common principles they can agree upon. And once we sort of agree upon what our demands are and we identify how those have been attacked, then I think people can organize organically, but all toward the common purpose of identifying the shared threat to our shared interests.
So identifying these common interests, what would you put out there as some of the things that most of us could agree on? I mean, if we had, I guess if there were like five positions out there and I could, and my main positions were out there and maybe I don't agree with them all, but, you know, I could be on board if three or four of my, if my main thing is on there and three out of five are part of these principles, yeah, I could sign up for that. What do you think the main position should be, and in particular, if there's something that you think is a top priority?
Well, let me describe it instead in terms of values, and then we can get into policy. Okay. And I think on my own thing, I work on a project called The National Right, which is a concept of how you unite people. And the four concepts that we're working with right now are responsibility, liberty, morality, and identity. And it's no accident these represent sort of a conservative, a constitutionalist, and alt-right, and potentially a Christian understanding of the world. And I think when you look at those four values, you find that in concert with one another, they work.
Get those four values one more time: morality, identity, responsibility. What was the other one?
And liberty.
Liberty.
Yeah, because you can't have liberty without responsibility, right? And morality is how you use them responsibly, and identity determines the culture upon which they work. And I think one of the things the Republican Party and the right generally has gotten wrong is they've been scared of identity. And without identity, you have values without people. And when you lose the human component to things, that's when it becomes very easy for discussions to become academic, and you stop really reaching people in a way that connects with them. So bringing those four pieces together, I would think those are four highly compatible values. And if you think about it, the counter values are kind of those of the left, right? Because if the value is responsibility, well, they don't show that. In fact, they encourage apathy, if you think about it.
Or their value is irresponsibility. I mean, the promotion of the single mother, and I don't want to be here ragging on single mothers, but the promotion of single mothers as being some sort of ideal or some sort of, you know, a badge of honor. It's a badge of honor. And you know, I don't want to shame these people, but let's face it, it is a misfortune. I think we can say that.
Well, you could say it's hard to say exact opposites, but you know, you would so say, maybe say dependency is the opposite of responsibility, and isn't that what they encourage?
Yes.
This idea that you give up individual choice, and you know, I think that fits with both liberty and responsibility, and they're very amoral about this because they're secular materialists who basically look at people as mouths to feed in pursuit of their vision of history, where people are an accessory to the realization of some abstract theory. I mean, that's their sense of identity. It's a lack of identity, in that we actually are homogenized to a sort of sameness. And for me, I mean, when I talk about this, I don't shy about using moral terms like good and evil, because I honestly see the right as a force of creation where we actually make distinction and we create and we build things and we preserve things. And where what they do is in their search for equality, they end up destroying. They're trying to unmake things because they're nihilists. They believe society is bad and it's unjust and we need material equality. But the only equality that's ever existed in human history or anything else is sameness. And sameness is death. I mean, life is about vitality and living and moving. And I think that as we learn to use this language on the right, where we understand our values represent something that should be cherished and preserved, like our civilization, like our people, that will become much more effective activists. And once we have that common understanding of what we are opposing and the threat it places on us, I think then we can sit down and hammer out a platform. Like I do on Gab, I ask people questions all the time about what they want to support. And if 80% of the people tell me they think it's a good idea, we can come to some conclusion where, if you have a platform, say 20 ideas, you like 17, and three of them you aren't crazy about, well, that's something we can work towards. And especially when we identify ourselves, what would they say, intersectionally, in terms of how we struggle.
Now, morality, identity, responsibility, liberty. Now, morality, when you talk about, you know, I don't like to use the terms right and left, but you talk about the establishment, which is now, I guess, identified as a left establishment, although you got, you know, the traditional conservatives are in line with it to a large extent, even if it's as a very loyal opposition. We had a professor once describing the Bolsheviks, saying their morality was immorality. And 100 years later, I think you can say the same thing. Look at last weekend on 60 Minutes, and they've got, you know, the openly gay Anderson Cooper interviewing the professional pornographic star, Stormy Daniels, and they're talking about Donald Trump, the president of the United States, and basically coloring him as the immoral person. That's rather bizarre. You look at these anti-gun rallies, they were very much organized by the establishment, by the media, by Jewish Hollywood stars. And, you know, they promote, there's a young girl with a shaved head who I guess is an open lesbian teenager, and she is now supposed to be an icon and role model for our high school kids. So their morality is certainly not the morality of American tradition, but they push it very, you know, they push it very strong. They give awards to Bruce Jenner, who was an idol when I was growing up. He was an idol. He was on the Wheaties box, but now he gets awards not for winning the decathlon, but for, I guess, mutilating his own genitalia. I'm not sure, and I don't really want the details on that, but something like that.
It's interesting, though, that every one of these things you pick out moral-wise is about self-destructiveness. It's about a negation of life and a limiting of possibilities for growth. I mean, even take gays and lesbians. Without, you know, casting aspersions, it's a dead end in terms of where that leads in terms of a future. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, in as much as the you use the word establishment, I'm just calling them the left and right by convention, but these people erase the past and seek to destroy the future. And, you know, if we're looking for labels to use, they're more effective. The ones I actually like is to call us the forces of quality and them the forces of quantity. I mean, their material view of the universe is such that they look to feed the most mouths. And
I'm going to stop you only because, yes, I want to emphasize that. I thought that's a really good point. So forces of quality versus the forces of quantity. Please continue.
I think that's really the key to understanding it, because even when they support people for having, you know, individual distinction, it's in a way where they never affirm values. Their whole way of looking at morality is a negation of what people believe, and they support minority causes not because of any genuine concern for the plight of those people, but rather as just one more means to destroy and divide people. And I'll offer a proof of this. Think about the 1930s when Franklin Roosevelt was president, and how the left majority was built on the plight of the rural white worker, you know, the Tennessee Valley Authority and stuff like that. That's who they said they would support, and those are the people they claimed were their people. But move 30 years later, and then all of a sudden, when you had Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society, another person who, you know, leftist communist force of quantity, activated minorities against now the rural whites. And then that comes to fruition fully with Obama, when you're talking about this idea that they cling to their guns and their religion. Well, them having values like that, where they were against the elites in the cities, wasn't so bad once. But it's only about the concern they have for their snowflakes and for these people who express socially divergent views is only relevant to them to the extent they have utility in destroying the existing social consensus even further. Because as you atomize people, you realize the goal of equality. As you take away the ability of people to organize in meaningful ways to build a society, and all of these movements they support, Islam is destructive in terms of taking away people's ability to have trust in society. You know, gay and lesbian movements destroy the family because there's no children coming forward. And everything they support fits into this common matrix. And people don't really understand it or see it. But when you start to look at that, that's one way you can build a morality of how you look at the world. And as people on the right, or as people against the establishment, we look for essential qualities, things that build, sustain, persevere, and continue forward. And I think that's the message we need to get out there, not this sterile message of policies and all that, but an understanding that this is a battle between life and death, of creation and destruction, and the forces of quality are the ones who are going to save our civilization and honestly save our species. Because beyond even the simple understanding of race, these people would do anything, embracing death, to try to create this equality. And, I'm sure the next thing will be machines being treated as equal. And when you look at all these things, because that's the logical development from, they go into bestiality, transgenderism, all these ways that just destroy identity, and they just destroy. And if there's one thing I could encourage people to do, it's to stand up against it and say, we're not giving up anything else of who we are. And mm-hmm. and we've done that for far too long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's
a little fired up. Sorry.
No, that's all really, really good. That's all really good. It gets me thinking so much. So, regarding identity and regarding who we are as a people, when I was a little boy, I had a lot of people in my environment who were born in the late 1800s or maybe the early 1900s. People. Often with hard to pronounce names like Kovacevic or Romanelli or what's in the too hard to pronounce, but still for a little kid it is. Sure. And these are people who would have come to the United States in the Ellis Island era, and they were people. Maybe they were born here. If they were first generation, they were born here. They didn't speak their parents' language. And it was as if the people who did come, not all of them, because certainly the Jews who came during that period of time came to remake the United States, but or use it as a base of operations. But so many of the people who came, it was, we're coming to be Americans. We're not just coming to America, we're coming to be Americans. I think that was how it was. There was certainly a mythos that was how it was. Certainly today, the expectation is not that these people are coming to be Americans. It's that these people are coming to change America. They're coming not to be one of us, but they're coming to be better than us. And Tucker Carlson, he emphasizes this point that the elites are telling us that the immigrants, the illegal immigrants even, are better than us, so just shut up. That's kind of his line.
Sure. Well, they're undocumented people, right? We're not allowed to call them illegal because law presupposes that we have more rights than they do.
Exactly. But in reality, well, certainly the documented ones or the undocumented ones who get amnesty then immediately have more rights than we do because, I mean, what is... the immigration policy is absolutely enormous. It's been transforming our society and, dictating who we wind up being. And immigration policy, as Eugene McCarthy pointed out in his book, A Colony of the World, the United States Today, which he wrote 25, 26 years ago, that immigration policy is in the hands of the immigrants. It's the 1965 Immigration Act with the family reunification policy being the main element of it, where 75% of the immigrants come because of family ties. It took policy out of the hands of the government and into the hands of the immigrants themselves.
It really has done that, and I agree with you that the goal of this was a transformation of the people who were here and to introduce more division into culture. Because if the argument that they put out there, at least they used to put out there, this doesn't happen as much these days, was just that it was trying to help the country, you would have never had multicultural policies placed at the same time you were assimilating new people. I mean, you need to have an incredibly strong culture to try to bring in new people, like existed at the turn of the previous century, where you had Eastern European and Southern European immigrants whose cultures were quite different than, you know, the people from Germany and England who had come earlier. And now you don't see that. Now the goal was just to bring them in and force us to acclimate to them, which obviously hasn't happened, with the predictable result that government power has increased as, you know, people want to see a referee between these different cultural ethoses that have been brought into America.
Okay. Well, we are about to go off the break. We should be hearing the music. Probably the audience is hearing the music. But let's continue this on the other side of the break.
Okay.
Okay, are we on break, Mr. Engineer? Yes, we are.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look and how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
City manager, town manager of Jackman, Maine. Is there anything you wanted to continue with from before the break, before I go back to my interrogation of you?
No, absolutely. You know, the nice thing is at least I get breaks. When I deal with people on the other side, they just keep coming nonstop. So I have to thank you for your civility, Patrick. It's great.
Okay, I was just getting some comments from my engineer there. All right. Well,
I mean, the one thing I would say, though, since you asked the question of what people can do to get involved, I think what we need to do is begin to professionalize what we're doing in a way where people stop being scared to come out and speak. And when you call out the not just the inconsistencies, but the base immorality of the leftist position and start to call the craziness that they present as normal as something that's fundamentally immoral and destructive, then we'll open the door for people to be able to speak under their own name. Because the one thing I've learned through my own efforts is that a lot of people are scared to speak because of social consequence, and that consequence is predicated on the idea that they control what is normal. And as you and I would agree, and I think most of the listeners would as well, they've presented an idea of normal that is a radical transformation from anything ever done throughout human history, let alone basic nature or biology. And we should fight them on that basis, because as we do so, more people will be able to join us. And even if we're starting with things that are incredibly basic, I mean, at this point, we've reached a moment of insanity where, like, we can't even assert basic things like men and women are different, or that people of different races might have different behaviors, without being cast out as some sort of zealots for what should be obvious, you know, assertions.
Yeah, and I told somebody a few years ago that I predicted that mommy and daddy, the term mommy and daddy, would become hate speech. And it hasn't quite gotten there yet, but there are schools that are instructing their teachers not to say boys and girls because it's not inclusive enough. So, it's there's a big change.
But, you know, I want to hit one point here. I think one thing we struggle with is people who work with us and listen to podcasts like yours, or your radio show, I should say, are incredibly well-educated and incredibly well-informed. And I think sometimes we get caught up in the details of our own knowledge, not understanding that so many people are so lost beyond any context that the details of how this destruction happened and all that have to be put aside for a moment while we start with really simple assertions to break through the sort of blocks of programming that people face. Like, even the linguistics of how people go out there, they're not prepared to have the basic self-interest that would be required to understand, you know, the question of how, say, Zionist control works, for instance. And I think that's one of the challenges that, you know, our leadership needs to take on in as much as it emerges, because right now, I mean, we have a very small, well-educated cadre that's out there and talking to people, but there's a mass of humanity that's just lost, and it's incredibly tragic.
So in terms of language, for instance, you have a good example?
I think a lot of times it's just – I mentioned the idea of normalcy earlier, and I think I'd start there by saying that we've let them control that, and we've let them control what's acceptable and not acceptable by this idea that certain concepts are indecent. I mean – at this point, I think as a counterculture, we should be okay with offending people, and that we should go ahead and bring back the language of quality. You know, judgment used to mean, you know, using your intellect. Discriminating was a word that meant you considered one thing to be better than the other. And yet we pay homage to these false ideals of equality that really only lead us down tracks that lead to their conclusion. And unless we draw these fundamental differences that are just so basic, but that are essential to building the struggle, we will not only not be able to talk about our problems, but never be able to organize the number of people it will take for any sort of solution, democratic or otherwise,
right,
to reclaim what in reality is a lapsing culture.
Yeah. So, and also, there's also not one size fits all. There's not one Swiss Army knife that's going to work in every situation. Sometimes you need to use different language in different places. And there are times when, you know, you point out Anderson Cooper and all of these, like, homosexual anchormen that there's Shep Smith on Fox, and they've got the black guy on CNN and so many others. And when you're talking about homosexuality, sometimes you can talk about it as maybe in terms of immorality or this or that. In other cases, I use the word misfortune, talking about the single parents, single mothers. That's something you can use anywhere. There's other examples, but that.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Back, nationalbugle.com. Nationalbugle.com. Check it out. It's up and running, getting better all the time. This is National Bugle Radio, and I'm Patrick Slattery here with Tom Kaczynski. And just before the break, we were talking about language. And as an example, I talked about, talking about homosexuality. You can always talk about it. Homosexuality, for instance, as a misfortune. I think that's a base that, is something you could always use. You can use stronger language in other contexts, but... you think about the propensity for communicable diseases, the inability of these people to reproduce, a whole bunch.
Well, that's it. I mean, think about it. If we use this in the context of quality versus quantity, the trade-off is the quantity of sexual relations and personal pleasures versus the quality of being able to transmit your genetics, your ideas onto the next generation. And I think that is important because when you have, a male-female bond, a marriage, let's say, that you now have created a stable entity that can raise children and, to bring it back to those values we talked about, that's responsible and that you have two partners that bring different skill sets in men and women that work together. And it's moral in that you have a child now being raised and you get liberty because now you have a way of providing a welfare system within the family, right? Because the original welfare state was parents looking out for their kids and then looking out for their grandparents as they get older. So when you look at quality and you make that the center of your argument, when you look at things linguistically, you start to find the natural progression of how these ideas come together. And what happens is, people will yell at you, but they want more freedom. They want more of this. And then you say, that's fine. But the choice comes down to, do you want to have more or do you want to have better? And that's how we begin to win the language war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. With another term, I had on the show, I guess a month ago or so, a gentleman from Britain named Andy Hitchcock, and he was making the case for white genocide. Not that there should be white genocide, but that there is white genocide. And he brought in the United Nations Convention on Genocide and went through it and made a very legalistic argument. And it's nothing I would argue against, but given the way that most people are familiar with the term genocide being used, it's a few degrees removed from what they're used to thinking of. Now, Tucker Carlson uses a term much more closer to replacement. They're replacing us, which is, it's not as strong a term, but it's a term that still reflects the reality and it is a term that probably could be used in any situation. What do you think of this type of thing?
Well, I think it just depends on your audience. I mean, you could make the argument genocide's hyperbolic, but on the other hand, if you look at white population in the last 100 years, it's reduced by about 2/3. And in every country that is predominantly white, the white majority is shrinking. Mm-hmm. And if you were to look at it in terms of how the policies enacted by the governments act, I think you could make an argument that it is a slow motion genocide. And I guess whatever is required to wake people up to the larger threat, I'm okay with. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe I'm thinking more as a politician than a philosopher in this case, because, I mean, we're not all being lined up for slaughter like we mm-hmm. think of genocide, but there's a lot of different ways in which, we are being set up to really not, we're being discouraged from reproducing ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. In lots of different ways that are, not just physical, but chemical, the way health is treated, social. So, In a lot of ways, what we're dealing with is actually broader than genocide. It's almost like euthanasia, if you think about it, that we're being encouraged to quietly go into the night and blend ourselves away into nothingness. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we have the right word, but until it comes, I have no problem with calling it genocide. But I understand that that's strong for people not having context of a whole bunch of information that makes that analysis, look defensible.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you have an hour-long radio show and you can bring in the United Nations definition, you can make the case. But in a casual conversation with a normie, that you might not be able to do that. Yet, just regarding the genocide, you call it a slow-motion genocide, but of course people talk about the American Indians as having been genocided or the Australian Aborigines. And they weren't lined up against the wall and shot. This was something that took generations or even centuries and involved all sorts of things. It involved a lack of resistance to diseases and things like that. It really wasn't a lot of people being lined up against the wall. And yet, that will be termed as a genocide. So, but it's not as if I'm proposing using the term genocide. I think it's you have to have different rhetorical tools depending on your audience and depending on the situation. I do think it's important to have these terms that you can use anywhere, kind of as a baseline. You know, you can certainly say that we are being replaced. You can certainly say that single motherhood or homosexuality is a misfortune. I mean, these are words that you can use anywhere, and so that's kind of the point I was trying to make.
I think that's true. The only thing I would add to that is that I think one of the successes of leftists generally is they've simplified language to the lowest common denominator, since that's their goal. They tend to describe things in bold colors, talking about things as good and bad, just and unjust, and they make these statements that are sort of non-falsifiable. And we have traditionally hedged from doing that because we try to be precise. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense because we look for the quality, the better of things. And one of the challenges we face is being able to speak that language to reach people who, for better or worse, have been indoctrinated into what I'm going to call the quantitative mode of thinking. You know, we could call it Marxism. The two are somewhat synonymous.
Okay, I want to move on to my next line of interrogation, and this is regarding political organization. So I know that you've had experience in, say, Republican, maybe Libertarian politics. What should we be doing? Should we be trying to take over Republican local parties? Should we be trying to run candidates in Republican primaries or even Democratic primaries when that might be the avenue? Should we be creating or, taking over a third party or creating our new party? Or should we be creating non-party institutions like a civic society, not necessarily aimed at electoral politics or maybe aimed at influencing electoral politics, but through different organizations? What kind of strategy do you think we should be pursuing?
Well, I'll offer two answers here that I think are somewhat separate, but both need to happen. Number one is we have to create a cultural civil society that can compete with the ideas of the left. Politics is downwind from culture, obviously. And when you control the ideas of what is normal and acceptable, politics will go down those pathways. So that, in a vacuum, is where you would think you'd start. But the truth is, given the culture of intimidation that exists and the institutional advantages that the establishment enjoys, I think that we do have to look at the political piece. And my answer would be that what I encourage people to do is to get involved in politics in whatever way best allows them to effectuate the outcomes that they desire. And I'll use an example of what I'm thinking. Now, I worked for a number of years within the Republican Party as a grassroots activist, and I found in my time there that single-issue voter groups were incredibly powerful, right? The gun lobby or anti-abortion, because they picked their ground, they stood on it, and they forced the politicians to come to them. And I think within the sort of sphere of quality, that is the model we need to adopt, that we assert our beliefs. We force politicians to come to us. We support those who go through and endorse those beliefs and who act upon them. And we be utterly relentless in removing those who betray those beliefs. And I think the reason we get such failing politics on the right broadly is because we let people stay in power far beyond when they should, when they represent an alternative, an echo, really, a lesser version of the left. I mean, that's the problem with conservatism in the Buckley years, right? Where basically it stood in opposition to the leftist cultural agenda, but it didn't actually do anything to prevent it, and it didn't offer ideas of its own.
It was a very, very loyal opposition.
Absolutely, incredibly. And we allow our ideas of patriotism and nationalism to defeat us in the blood sport, because these people are radical revolutionaries who have shown no limitation in destroying societies. I mean, anywhere the hard left, the communists have come to power, and these people are that, you know, you have a repeat of what the Bolsheviks did in Russia, and or what's happening in Venezuela today, to pick a more relevant example. And the details change, and they're interesting. But at the end of the day, the human misery is pretty universal. So I don't think – I think whatever's the most efficient way is the best way. If the Republican Party can be remade to be a nationalist party that supports white interests, then I think that's the easiest way to do it. Trump has made some progress in that direction. I think others can continue pushing that along if they present themselves as the key wedge that determines elections. Because as much as politicians are bought, they're also bought with votes and in primaries. And where you might need 50% in a general election, maybe you only need 20% of people to turn out to win a primary, especially in an off year. Mm-hmm. And so that means if you can control 2% of the people, you might be the difference between winning and losing an election. And to the extent people take you seriously, I think that's one way you can succeed. And we should support and endorse people who go out there and who bravely say things like Paul Nehlen, for example. Mm-hmm. I think that that really opens a lot of people's eyes, and we need to go ahead and figure ways to put our issues out there in ways where, you know, they can be publicly acceptable. And that could mean either how we present what we say or moving that Overton window further to the right, which is the cultural aspect.
So we do have the midterm elections coming up, and there is Paul Nehlen, who's has a relatively high profile, and he has come out. He has pretty much come out and is saying what he thinks. He's saying whatever he thinks. And some of what he's saying, some of what he thinks, is not necessarily what he thought two or 2.5 years ago when he started this project. I think he's undergone a lot of learning. But it's not as if 2018 is shaping up to be a nationalist version of the Tea Party movement, especially the AstroTurf phase of the Tea Party movement that ran all these candidates in 2010 in the midterm elections, got a lot of people nominated in the primaries and then mostly went on to ignominious defeats in the autumn. Mm-hmm. So just looking forward to 2018, this year's midterms election, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of candidates that could be looked at as test cases for us. And then a little bit forward, by 2020, do you think Trump is going to be able to take over the party and reform it in his image, or is he going to split off, or do you have any inkling of what you think might happen?
Well, I think that it's a question that we need to answer, that we need to figure out how to shape the Republican Party into the image of what it needs to become. I think, you know, a smart intervention during primaries can do that. And I agree with you largely that we're not going to see that in 2018. I think a lot of people thought the victory was won after Trump got elected and, you know, hoped for that. But it hasn't worked out that way. And that was probably short-sighted. I'm less pessimistic, actually, than a lot of people about the midterm, especially since the left has decided to go make the guns their primary target. And if I was a leftist advocate, the last issue I would pick to make an issue coming into a midterm is the idea that you were going to limit the Second Amendment. I can think of no other issue that better organizes the right.
And did you notice that John Paul Stevens, the former Supreme Court judge, just, I guess, yesterday made the case of repealing the Second Amendment?
Yeah, I saw that, and it actually probably he should get a beautiful thank you basket from the NRA or maybe the Gun Owners of America as well, because I'm sure more memberships have been sold and more guns are going to be picked up because, I mean, fundamentally, the gun-owning community does not trust the government and does not trust the leftists who want to take the guns. And I guess that kind of comes back to the question, which is that, you know, when we look at the coming election cycles, I'm okay with making compromises of voting for Republicans if they get to the general, because I think buying ourselves time until we can effectively launch our own opposition, whether through the party or around the party, is needed. I can only imagine if Hillary were in office right now, what those on the far right would be dealing with in terms of persecution you know, from the IRS, from potentially law enforcement. I mean, you'd have community policing money going to groups like Black Lives Matter, like it did when Holder was in there. Mm-hmm. So having Trump in there, whatever inefficacy he has in certain areas, is still a godsend. And, you know, we need to endorse that, I think, as long as we can until we have a better alternative. And the best guidance I can offer is the reason the left has been successful for many years is whatever compromises they make, they only ever go in one direction toward their position. And I think we need to have the same intransigence if we're going to be successful. And beyond that, I think it's too hard to make any predictions other than to say that, you know, we need to have a very clear sense of what it is we want, because the truth is the trouble we're always going to have is government tends toward collectivism, and that the people in office within the Republican Party will be more inclined to listen to the donors than the grassroots, as they've done for a great many years, unless mm-hmm. we make the pain threshold rather high for them.
You know, sometimes you go to the dentist and they put these dye on your teeth so they can, maybe so that they can see where the plaque is. I sometimes think of one of the values of the Trump administration as he's just thrown dye all over the American political system. And you can see where the deep state is. You can see where all of these forces are. Had Hillary been elected, the gun control or the immigration would just be seen as democracy working. But when you have a president who's actively opposing immigration and being overturned by lower courts, being subjected to this 24/7 media attack, it shows where these forces are. Okay, we'll be back after the break with more from Tom Kaczynski.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have? Do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank-you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Show. It's National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Tom Kaczynski. And before I move on to my next round of interrogation, how would people find your work, and if they want to support you and your family, how would they find you?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. At this point, I would say emailing me at newalbion@protonmail.com is a good option. My main social media at this point, because I'd get banned anywhere else, is at gab.ai. Just look up Tom Kaczynski, KAWCZYNSKI. I will have a new website up soon for the National Right Project. I have several URLs for that, but it's not up yet. So next time we talk, maybe I'll have it up by then and we can share that. But definitely appreciate all the support. Want to say a heartfelt thank you to everyone who donated to support myself and Dana as we continue this fight forward. And, you know, every day I wake up with the goal of making them regret making me famous. So I'm going to continue working at it.
Yes, and I think you'll be successful in that. Okay, so we only have a couple more minutes. We've talked about, you know, ideas and narratives and rhetoric. We've talked about the development of or use of parties, the development of new parties or organizations. Last thing is, say, street activism. Regarding Charlottesville, there's a debate on whether Charlottesville was useful or not, whether, you know, some people say, I told you so. Some people say, well, you know, we certainly learned a lot. We flushed them out, and we see what their game is. What's your view on the usefulness of street activism, especially in the wake of Richard Spencer now having suspended his university tour?
Yeah, it's a hard thing because the details matter a lot. But generally speaking, I think that we benefit anytime people get to see these leftist hordes emerge and see what they represent, how violent and aggressive they are. As much as the media had one narrative of Charlottesville, if you look through all the comments sections, thinking Americans realized that the story they were told didn't quite fit the pictures they were seeing. And so I support street activism in a nonviolent capacity where we go out there and speak truth to power. And if, as someone who plans on going out this summer actually to do some of that myself, you know, they can come at me and I will stand on my beliefs. And if they attack me, I will defend myself with my fists and with my words if need be. But I'm going to not be quieted by the threat of violence, because that's really what their whole system depends upon: intimidation, whether it be economic or physical. And so we need to be able to confront that. And even though I think some people may have been overzealous, I have nothing but respect for people who took to the streets to make very clear they were not content with what was happening. And I think, frankly, they deserve, you know, leadership that will make use of their willingness to commit themselves.
Okay. Well, in this last minute, I just want to thank you for coming on, and I hope you'll come on again soon.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always happy to come on the show and enjoy listening sometimes when I'm not there. And thank you for all that you do.
Okay. Well, that's our bugle call. And I'll be back again tomorrow. And tomorrow I have a brand new guest. And that is Bree Fauché from This Week on the Alt-Right. And so I'll see you back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Home.
homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.